get ready for an all-new Hardline segment. It's time to step into the snake pit. And now, with something completely over the top, the host and star of the snake pit,
Snake.
Friday, bye.
American Leak Detection.
Okay, really quick. Our buddy Dean over in the Fort Worth area sent me a note and says he has four tickets. And I think he said they're like, I don't know if the Granada is selling suites or what, but he has four tickets to Summer Chill.
Summer Chill.
Which is tomorrow night. And he says, can you find them a home? And I says, absolutely, I can find them a home. And so if anybody wants to go tomorrow night, I have four tickets. Now, DJ, do you want to handle this like in some form of email or whatever?
Generic, but yeah, I can handle it.
Maybe the 1,310th caller.
That's a great
Please.
Idea.
How about the first caller?
Or how about the first one to email you at what? Daniel dot, and your email address.
Daniel dot, but it's Tom complicated. Though,
don't
spelling.
Tell him how to spell Ringenberg.
Right.
Okay, you got to figure that out, and you have to tell DJ, I'm looking forward to hearing
Let's Bunce.
Well,
or that.
That was the bit. Like he had to name the song, but yeah, that's it. That's all you got to say.
Promise you're using them.
Daniel.Ringenberg@cumulus.com.
Okay. And Ringenberg is a little difficult to spell, but that's up to you to figure it out. He's all over the papers. You can find him.
Try all potential spellings of Ringenberg and see what you come up with.
Just look up felons in Texas.
Jeez.
Dave.
He's not a felon.
He's a jerk. Okay.
He's paid his debt.
So I don't know if this has ever happened before for me concerning something that was brought up as a joke that I became so consumed by, and it happened because of some offhanded horrible comment that Bob made.
Oh no.
So Bob made a joke the other day that led to an emergency break concerning freebasing cocaine. In which he, out of the blue, tied in freebasing cocaine to a band from the late 60s and early 70s called Three Dog Night.
But to be fair, I'm just trying jokes all the time. Once in a while.
That stopped us all down. I mean, it was a record scratch, halting stop.
Yeah. I get accused of being a volume shooter. He's a volume shooter, too.
Then he tried to blame
us. But mine are safe for the whole family.
Yes.
Then he tried to blame his teacher from eighth grade or something for dropping that bomb on
him. Mr. Wasaba, he has a name.
So Three Dog Night is a band that I think One is the Loneliest Number is their most popular song. Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog. Is that the name of the song?
I guess.
I think so.
Anyway, Joy to the World.
Joy to the World. That's
I think
it.
That one's more popular.
Joy to the World?
I think so.
I mean, that is such a killer keyboard intro.
It's awesome.
So that's Chuck singing, I think. So Chuck Negron is the lead singer. And then we've determined that your tie-in, to your teacher telling you that Three Dog Night freebased was in fact a reference to their lead singer, Chuck Negron, who had a horrible drug problem.
Yeah, I mean, look.
That was it.
I could have just had two brain nerves cross and who knows why I said it.
Well, either way,
but yeah.
Either way, over the weekend, because, you know, I like to party, I started reading about.
I started freebasing.
I started trying to freebase, just like Chuck Negron.
How do you do this?
Sounds so fun.
I'm going to figure this out, I swear.
Corby with a Bunsen burner and safety goggles.
Yeah, I'm doing it the safe way. And I started reading about this guy, and I'm like, oh my God. Now, he's still alive at the age of 82.
Is this Snake Pit to vindicate me?
Yes, it is.
Heck yes.
But it's also a Snake Pit to bring up something that I can't believe was such a prevalent thing back in the day. So I'm going to read you an excerpt from his book that Chuck Nagron wrote in the 2000s.
Okay.
Again, this man is still alive, but back in the early days when he was first in Three Dog Night, he was a crew cut guy. He was not a hippie at all, and he had a basketball scholarship to a small college in California, ended up transferring and playing at a bigger school. He was an athlete that was also a musician,
mm-hmm.
and so started writing songs and things like that. Well, he did not do drugs. So it always intrigues me to hear about these guys that never did drugs before when they were in high school or really college. How does it start? How do they become, and this guy was living in a cardboard box for a decade in California before he got sober. So how does it all start? So he says in his book, it was such an exciting, glamorous setting that when the drugs came around, stuff I turned down for years because it wasn't like me and I didn't want any part of it, but it all became so new. And he said the first drug that he ever tried was cough syrup.
Robo-death.
And it was something called Romalar cough syrup. And his friends would offer it to him. Hang on, Lando. And he said, why would I want that? I don't even have a cold. Like, he was so naive about it. So he started taking cough syrup. And then he says, I made a decision in a heartbeat that I was going to do something with total naivete, with no sense that this could be a problem. He says, I was at a table upstairs in the Rainbow Room, a famous club in, is it on the Sunset Strip, Dave? The Rainbow Room?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it is, out in L.A. And he says, two tall, gorgeous girls were selling Quaaludes. So what did I do? I bought them all. So again, this guy had never done drugs outside of drinking cough syrup, which I don't even know what that does. Makes you sleepy? I don't know.
Well, I will say, in college, probably the hardest I've ever tripped in my life, I accidentally mixed NyQuil and Boone's Farm.
Oh, my God.
Like, I wasn't feeling real good, and I took some NyQuil, and then I was like, I'm still going to go out, and I had a bottle of Boone's Farm, and then...
You're gone.
Yeah. I think I started doing fake Kobe.
Yes. So, he says, these gorgeous girls that I bought all the Quaaludes from, they invited me to a party in the Hollywood Hills, and I got loaded. And I started fooling around. A girl came over and kissed me and dropped something. Again, this is night one. Night one of drugs.
Number one.
A girl came over and kissed me and dropped something in my mouth. It ended up being a combination of peyote and LSD. On night one, after doing the Quaaludes, apparently I was standing near a glass top table in the living room and passed out, fell face first onto the table because the next morning I woke up with my face ripped up and blood all over the couch. From that time on, he says, I got high every single day until I got sober 30 years later.
Mark. Jeez.
He says, unless I had gotten arrested and had to go to jail. So right.
When you're forced to dry out.
Right.
Like, Dave, were you doing purple drink?
No, I didn't.
Because that's like codeine and soda, right?
Yeah, no, I honestly did not mix it on purpose. It might have been.
That's what Johnny Jolly got arrested for.
It might have been DayQuil, yeah. But I took some cough syrup because I wasn't feeling well, and then friends were going out, and I was like, I feel good enough now to go out. And then.
He says, within two nights, all right, so night one. Night one was a handful of Quaaludes, peyote, and LSD. Within 2 days, he's a heroin addict.
Jeez.
There was a reason that he shouldn't have done any of that. He should have stuck to his principles.
And we're speaking of Chuck Nagron, who Bob made a joke about, innocently enough, and then I became obsessed with this guy. He says, soon I was devoting my whole life to heroin. I stayed faithful to it for 10 years, 7 months, and 2 weeks. I didn't care about anything or anybody. I just wanted my dope.
I stayed faithful to heroin.
Yes.
That's a weird thing to say.
Then the hits came. the songwriting hits, and life was unbelievable. Now, here's where it gets even crazier. And this is where I start to think, does this go on anymore in any circle of rock and roll?
And it gets even awesomer.
Because I know it did. I've read the Motley Crue book, Dirt, and all that, and we've heard the stories of the 70s guys, right, and the 80s guys. But, I don't think this is a thing anymore. He says, soon we were touring and life was unbelievable. I remember that sex at this time was wild, and so were the women. My first orgy came on tour in 1969 in Tulsa.
Mark.
BJ Thomas was in the top 10 with his song Hooked on a Feeling. By the way, my neighbor BJ Thomas. Growing not here now. I think he's, yeah. He was our opening act. After the concert, we went to a club filled with guys with crew cuts and cowboy hats. We got drunk, got high, were carrying on. Eventually, BJ Thomas, other guys, we got upstage to jam with the house band. The girls started staring at us, and the country guys were mad as hell. The evening progressed to our wing at the Holiday Inn. There was sex going on in the hallway, in the bathtubs, on the floor, doors wide open, everybody switching partners. It was gruesome and unreal. It was rock and roll. Now, so we're weeks into peyote, LSD, heroin every day, and now orgy. He says, now I'd have sex several times a day with different women. It seemed like every time I looked around, there they were. I worked out a system to handle the sex overflow. I would book a suite with a couple of bedrooms. I'd have sex with a girl in one bedroom, then another. By the time I finished with her, a third one would be waiting in the first bedroom. Sex became a meaningless game, but it was all incredibly fun. Often I'd leave the stage after our encore while the audience was still chanting our names. I'd go back in the hotel room with nothing but dead silence. I promised myself I wouldn't do heroin. I wouldn't have sex. I'd stay in the room, maybe watch little TV and go to sleep by myself. But soon I'd hear all the women in the hallway and I'd inevitably open the door. More good looking girls who'd pour into my hotel room, take off their clothes and be ready to party. And that was his life. Every single day. All based on trying cough syrup one night that led to peyote and LSD and everything else nights later. And that is how you become an addict. In every form, though, like drugs and sex and excess and all of it. Like, all of it at once.
Well, and especially when you're young and successful and everything is handed to you. You're not having to turn tricks to earn your next fix. It just shows up in your hotel room.
Right.
This sounds like justice for Mr. Wasaba.
Dude, there's no doubt. And whether or not this goes on now... So, touring...
Diddy.
Yeah, but that's not a tour. I'm talking about, like, touring with, like, acts right now. I don't think it happens because it's such big business, as we talked about before. You don't make money off selling records. And if you screw up your tour, you screw up your livelihood.
Yeah, and you also don't want lawsuits, a trail of lawsuits following you every city you visit.
Right, and seeing some of these acts... Backstage, half these guys are sober. They don't do anything. They might have at a younger age. They don't do anything anymore. And everything is by the book and above board. Like, it's crazy how tight the ship is run and how, a beer here and a beer there. And I get it. There's addiction and what's still going on and things like that in the business. But overall, this is a world that does not exist anymore. It's gone from our landscape. And you know what? Thank God. This sounds crazy.
I was going to say too bad.
Too bad, man.